Topic 2, the life trap of abandonment. For some people, the world of social interactions is a very threatening place. Diagnostically, in psychology, there are a number of disorders that correspond to this kind of threat. Some people, for example, suffer from panic disorder, where when in public places, they experience unexpected panic attacks, that sense of jitteriness or shakiness, sweatiness, shallow breathing. That's very disorienting and frightening for the person who is experiencing them, and certainly threatening and scary for people who witness these kinds of attacks. Social anxiety, more broadly speaking, is also characterized by this sense of threat in public or social contexts. Some of the personality disorders that are associated with this threat include paranoid personality or schizoid personality, a loner, a person who avoids other people, borderline personalities who have very unreliable and volatile relationships with other people, and the avoidant personality who is afraid of criticism or rejection from others and so spends much of his or her life isolated and, in a paradoxical way, fulfilling exactly the fear that they hold so much, namely that people are not part of their company. In all of these cases, instead of finding comfort, humor, ease, and warmth in the company of family, friends, and work associates, you may experience yourself as more detached from social relationships, perhaps freezing up in interpersonal settings, or simply avoiding them altogether to protect yourself from those uneasy feelings. As a result, you may end up with no close friends or confidants, left alone with your anger or resentment. Or worse, you may become overly suspicious of the intentions of others, believing that they are ultimately out to deceive and harm you. You may be harboring grudges, unwilling to accept that others are capable of sincerity in their contrition and in making amends. Forgiveness may seem impossible and probably not even desirable because you have lost your capacity for empathy. You have learned to value your self-sufficiency above all else, and have built up an impermeable wall around your heart. From a life trap perspective, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a moment, you may be under the influence of those rigid beliefs associated with early childhood experiences of disconnection and rejection. Life traps include abandonment, emotional deprivation, mistrust, and many others. Listen to the following statements designed to measure each of these life traps, adapted from the Jeffrey Young Schema Questionnaire. The life trap of abandonment may be characterized by statements such as the following. I am preoccupied with losing the significant people in my life. Or, I often worry about being left alone. I don't feel that important relationships will last. In fact, I expect them to end. It seems that the important people in my life are always coming and going. When I feel someone distancing from me, I get even more clingy. I become upset when someone leaves me alone, even for a short period of time. All of these statements are characteristic of the abandonment life trap. And by life trap, I mean the core fear that emerges from early childhood experiences of actual abandonment or loss of a significant parent or caregiver, either through divorce, separation, or death. In the wake of these kinds of childhood experiences, the person is likely to develop this abandonment life trap, which is a chronic fear that other significant people in my life will inevitably leave me. And so this sets the person up for a history of relationships that are characterized by the holding on, that clingy holding on, that those preoccupied attachments with significant others, because I'm always afraid that they're going to leave me in preference to someone else who is more attractive, more intelligent, more wealthy, whatever the more may be. And so I end up being very vulnerable to distress and the kind of emotional lability, up and down feelings that are very disorienting to me personally and very threatening and frightening to the people with whom I engage in relationships, because that level of preoccupation and clinginess is too much for any one person to handle. And so what ends up happening for people with this abandonment life trap is that the significant others do, in fact, eventually leave them and, again, fulfill that prophecy that is so frightening for the person with this life trap from the very start. Other variations of this abandonment life trap are the emotional deprivation life trap. This one originates in childhood experiences not of actual loss or separation, as in the case with abandonment, but more in the case of a significant parent or caregiver who is there physically but emotionally distant. Listen to these statements that characterize the emotional deprivation life trap. I am constantly looking for more love and support in my life. Or, I have never found someone who really appreciates what I am feeling. Many of my relationships are with unemotional people. I feel emotionally detached from most people. You see, the emotional deprivation life trap sets me up for expecting that others will not understand me, will not provide empathy, support, or guidance. And so, in anticipation of this toxic outcome, I end up building walls, emotional walls around me so that I don't get hurt. And this detached life, of course, is, as we saw in the case of the abandonment life trap, once again the very fulfillment of the situation that I fear so much. People with an emotional deprivation life trap often find people in relationships who are emotional distancers. And so they get exactly what they fear. And a third variation on the abandonment life trap is the mistrust and abuse life trap. This life trap originates in childhood experiences of abuse, emotional, physical, sexual abuse, where the world of the child is presented as very dangerous and unsafe. And this person develops this core fear, this life trap that makes social relations very threatening, because the person is always anticipating that the significant others will ultimately lie cheat, steal, manipulate in some way. And so the person with this life trap spends a lot of time scheming, plotting, trying to manipulate others at home and in the workplace before they can get them. Listen to a few of the statements that characterize this life trap of mistrust and abuse. I believe that people will take advantage of me if I give them the chance. Or, I have to stay suspicious of others, or else I'll be hurt. People misinterpret kindness for weakness. Or, it's dangerous to trust anyone. Now, if your family of origin was detached, cold, withholding, or abusive, then you have probably learned to see the world of human interactions as threatening and undesirable. You may be afraid of abandonment, or believe that people are ultimately incapable of meeting your needs for emotional reliability and support. If you experienced physical, emotional, or sexual abuse as a child, it would not be surprising for you to believe now that anyone is likely to hurt or take advantage of you, perhaps especially those who ought to be close to you. The core problem underlying this life trap is, of course, the fear and isolation that results from the perception of extreme vulnerability in interpersonal interactions. Unfortunately, this kind of experience is not uncommon in our society. Sherry Turkle, a professor at MIT, wrote in Science, Technology, and Society, and I quote, "Terrified of being alone, yet afraid of intimacy, we experience widespread feelings of emptiness, of disconnection, and of the unreality of self. And here the computer, a companion without emotional demands, offers a compromise. You can be a loner, but never be alone. You can interact, but need never feel vulnerable to another person." So many people today, with the advent of so many means of communication, cell phones and Blackberries and all kinds of web tools, are able to have interpersonal communications with walls, as it were. Or so many people are so connected to the cell phone and to these other ways of being with other people in virtual and other ways 24/7, that sometimes I wonder if it simply isn't a way of coping with abandonment life trap. In other words, I know that the other person is always accessible. I often remark when I see students in class who, the moment the class is over and the door opens, they can't wait to reach for the cell phone or the texting. Perhaps they're doing the texting, God forbid, even during my lecture. But they do that, I suggest to them, because they need to be reminded that they're still thought of, that they're still loved, that somebody is still accessible to them. Perhaps this is a way culturally that we have found to cope with these deep-seated fears of abandonment or emotional deprivation. It's a thought. We do know that cyber addictions are a huge problem in our society, where people are turning to these various means of communication, which are, after all, intended for good purposes to promote communication for personal and professional reasons, but turning to them to soothe these core fears. We cope with these life traps in various ways. Sometimes we cope with them by maintaining them. And what I mean by this is, for example, people who have a mistrust or abuse life trap sometimes find abusive partners. Or people with an abandonment life trap, oftentimes when they start to get into a relationship, they're attracted to people who are precisely the ones who are most at risk for abandoning them. You know, a person, for example, of high profile, a player, if you will, might be very attractive to the person with the abandonment life trap because they, in a sense, smell in the person the possibility for abandonment, which is at the same time so essentially frightening, but also so essentially attractive. And sometimes in the course of psychotherapy with a person who has the abandonment life trap, I will suggest to them, try to find a partner. Try to date somebody who is not so likely to abandon. This person may seem to you more flat, less interesting, less stimulating and exciting initially. But this is the kind of stable person who over time will be there for you. But we can maintain the life trap at high price to ourselves. Sometimes people deal with these life traps simply by avoiding other people altogether. Play it safe. I won't connect. I'll build the wall. I'll stay detached. Or sometimes we cope by overcompensating. That is, getting engaged in impulsive relationships, short-term relationships where there is no possibility for stability or commitment, because it gives the person with the life trap a sense of power and control. I can engage, I can disengage, and I will never be vulnerable to the other person. If any of these life traps are walling you in emotionally, how do you get out? Where do you start? First, it is important to do a thorough self-examination to determine the extent to which these life traps may be influencing your life. The first goal in recovery from any of these life traps is to develop an appropriate sense of self-awareness. Are you so used to being a loner that you have become largely unaware of your feelings toward others, especially the anger and resentment that you bear? Remember, fear and anger are two sides of the same coin. Where there is fear, as in the case of these life traps, there is also anger. And where there is anger, there is always fear. We often are not aware, we don't recognize the flip side of the feeling, but they always go together, and that can be a very helpful question to promote self-awareness. When I am in touch with the fear, what am I angry about? And conversely. Or are you too aware of others and so focused on any hints of unreliability or potential for manipulation and deceit on their part that you minimize or ignore your own bitter feelings and their toxic effects on others? Once you have fostered a heightened sense of self-awareness, the second goal is to develop ease in communicating these feelings to others, a task that has been no doubt avoided at all cost up to this point. Psychological and spiritual resources are useful tools in meeting these goals of life trap recovery. Toward the first goal of becoming more self-aware, Some psychological approaches include the use of a journal. You're safe in expressing your feelings on a page that will not be shared with anyone. No one will judge, abandon, misunderstand, or use that information against you. Writing down your thoughts and feelings on a daily basis, even for only 10 minutes a day, can serve as a safe and effective means of paying attention to yourself. Many studies have shown that this writing down of feelings can improve physical health, enhance immune function, reduce cardiovascular reactivity, and even prolong your life. From a spiritual perspective, centering prayer has been used as a way of strengthening self-awareness. It delivers the physical and emotional benefits described with journaling, and studies have shown that this kind of prayer relieves stress, bolsters self-esteem, and reduces symptoms of anxiety and depression. Thomas Keating has offered a helpful method for engaging in centering prayer. He suggests that we choose a sacred word as a symbol of one's intention to open and yield to God's presence and action within, to sit comfortably with eyes closed and to relax. Then let the sacred word as a symbol of one's consent to God emerge. During the time, avoid analyzing the experience. And at the end of the prayer time, remain in silence with your eyes closed for a short time. This kind of exercise is designed to focus your awareness and to improve your power of concentration, to try to counter the emotional numbness that has gone so much with the life traps that you have known through your life, so that you can begin to experience peace, joy, and well-being. Still another spiritual practice that is related to centering prayer is the practice of mindfulness. Rather than judging or trying to control your fears or negative expectations of others, mindfulness is about cultivating an attitude of acceptance. Simply focusing on what you are thinking and feeling and experiencing in the present moment without trying to block the feelings or change them. Just letting the thoughts and emotions pass over you, as it were. This kind of mindfulness may help you to tolerate those fears long enough to appreciate that they are not completely in charge of your life. The more you cultivate an awareness that you are in control of the fears, and that these fears are not separate forces that can harm and destroy you, the more empowered you will feel to overcome these life traps. Second goal is communicating your feelings. Try with a spiritual director or a trusted companion, someone that you could try to communicate the fear, the anger, the confusion, the shame, whatever the starting point, whatever emotion that you are most aware of, to other people. One of the toxic effects of the life traps has been to close you off from the possibility of allowing yourself to be vulnerable in communicating these feelings to other people. It's time to gain experience in doing this so that you can take control of your life and grow in truth and in holiness and in freedom.